This holiday season, please consider supporting the Cato Institute and specifically the Cato Daily Podcast. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to get started. If you support Cato with a donation of $1,000 or more, I'll gladly give you a shout out on the podcast, or you can designate another individual to receive that benefit and all the other benefits of being a Cato sponsor. That website again is cato.org/podcast sponsor. And thank you for your generosity. This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, December 19th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. The House of Representatives has impeached the president for the third time in U.S. history. What should we expect for a Senate trial controlled by the president's party? Is a failure to convict a foregone conclusion? Cato's Gene Healy comments.
Donald Trump became the third president in 230 years of U.S. constitutional history to be impeached by the House. And regardless of what happens in the Senate, he's almost certainly not going to be removed. Just that impeachment vote is probably going to leave a mark. It's the central black mark on Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton's legacies. Right up front in their Wikipedia entries. And there's always this talk when you have an impeachment debate going on, can't we just do censure instead? The sense of the House resolution that says the president did bad things. Well, that's pretty irrelevant. It's essentially, you could do that. It's more or less like declaring it National Boy Scout Week. Nobody remembers, unless they can name Andrew Jackson, who was censured by the Senate. I mean, basically, nobody remembers these motions. But people do remember impeachment. Impeachment by the House, even without a Senate conviction, is really the Constitution's censure mechanism. And no president wants to be impeached. There was this theory going around that Donald Trump was really wanted to be impeached. But if you look at the angry letter he sent to Nancy Pelosi the other day, or just his Twitter feed, it's pretty clear he didn't want to be impeached. He's mad about it. On the other hand, though, Bill Clinton reacted to his impeachment, the prospect of his impeachment, with a bunch of airstrikes, including bombing Iraq on the eve of the House vote. So seems to me that angry letters and rage tweeting are an improvement.
Generally preferable. So what happens next?
The House is supposed to pick impeachment managers, who are essentially the prosecutors and will deliver the case. They're supposed to send the articles to the Senate. Nancy Pelosi said on Wednesday night, though, that, they were holding up sending the articles over in order to bargain with the Senate on, what kind of trial they were going to get, what kind of witnesses were going to be called. I got to say, I don't understand this move. It seems to me that the GOP is not crazy about holding a trial in the first place. Threatening not to make them hold the trial doesn't seem to be a great leverage,
right? But if the tactic is, and this is sort of small ball stuff here, and only historians will care about it, I think. But if the tactic is, I would like to threaten to move this trial to a less convenient time for you, Senator McConnell, is that a legit tactic?
Well,
I mean, it's a game theory, right? We're in game theory.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. It's an interesting idea and makes more sense than trying to extract concessions from the Senate by making them, do something not have to do something they don't particularly want to do in the first place. And, maybe that's what it is. I mean, despite what President Trump says, it doesn't seem to me that Nancy Pelosi is dumb. So maybe there's something here that we're not seeing.
So what does the Constitution require of a Senate trial for impeachment?
Not much. It says that Article 1, Section 3, that Senate has the sole power of to try impeachments. And that's, been interpreted pretty broadly. It says that the senators have to be on oath or affirmation. The Chief Justice presides, and that it takes 2/3 of the senators present to convict, and the rest is kind of up to the Senate to fill in the blanks.
Andrew Johnson was the first president to be put on trial for impeachment. It's, to the extent that that was unprecedented, how did senators then think about their orders from the Constitution?
Well, they were figuring it out as they went along, and for them, they were writing more on a blank slate than we are now. That was really the, of the two Senate trials of a president, Johnson's in 1868 and Clinton's in 1999, Johnson's was really the only one with real drama. He missed conviction by one vote. They actually carried in as an Iowa Republican senator who had a sort of paralyzed from a stroke that they carried in bodily to vote to acquit. So the Clinton trial was much more of a foregone conclusion, and we learned from that trial in particular that while the Chief Justice presides, he doesn't rule. The rules are that the Chief Justice can make rulings on evidentiary questions and that sort of thing. Senate can put it to a vote and overrule the Chief Justice's ruling with a majority vote. So a lot of this will be a game of trying to get to 51 to make it happen in the way that you want it to happen. Chief Justice Rehnquist, who mainly distinguished himself by he had his own special robe that he designed with stripes on the sleeves. He said afterwards something to the effect of, "I did nothing in particular and did it very well."
So, how will this play out? The assumption is that this trial will start in January. It could be 2 weeks. It could be 6 weeks. Bill Clinton's trial was 6 weeks. Is that right?
Just over a month, okay. If I recall correctly. They want it to be, at least the Republicans want it to be shorter. The math says that Trump will almost certainly survive a Senate trial. To get to 67, you'd need 20 Republicans to cross the aisle and vote to convict a president of their own party. It looks extremely unlikely that's going to happen. As far as whether it will provide any real spectacle, neither Johnson or Clinton testified in their own Senate trials. Johnson apparently wanted to, but was talked down from it. It's harder to talk Donald Trump down from things like this. The Senator Cornyn, Republican from Texas, said the other day that, that we shouldn't call witnesses because calling witnesses would lead to a three-ring circus, but people like circuses. And it wouldn't be, at least for entertainment value, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to see, Mick Mulvaney, John Bolton, and Hunter Biden all called, and maybe, as the president suggested, Alan Dershowitz as his lead defense counsel. I don't know if that's going to happen. You hear different things. There are some reports that President Trump really wants to do a trial and to vindicate himself, and that would put him at odds, I think, with Senator McConnell and the GOP leadership. But I think, as we've learned over the last couple of years, when it comes to providing drama, you don't want to rule President Trump out.
So to the extent that witnesses who did not participate in the impeachment inquiry at the order of the White House, there's a not insignificant likelihood that we would learn new things from these people if they were called to testify.
Yes, and if they showed up. You may run into the same problem you had at the House inquiry, that President Trump doesn't want fact witnesses with firsthand knowledge to testify. I guess They could send the sergeant at arms to arrest John Bolton, and that would provide further drama, but it doesn't seem very practical.
So there isn't then more clarity here about who may be compelled to testify than in the actual impeachment inquiry in the House?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the Senate and the House should have the power to compel attendance, but I don't see a mechanism short of an arrest by the sergeant at arms or a federal court, probably a Supreme Court decision that says they have to testify, that can force them to testify if they don't want to.
Gene Healy is a vice president at the Cato Institute and author of Indispensable Remedy. And now it's time for a shout out. Tony Costanzo, thank you for supporting this podcast and the broad mission of the Cato Institute. Your contribution, in short, makes our work possible. You too can support the Cato Institute and this podcast with an end of the year gift. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor, and thank you.